This is New Horizons, the weekly program from Blind Citizens Australia, the united voice of blind and vision impaired Australians.
Ride our dreams down, future road.
Hello, Vaughan Bennison with this week's edition of New Horizons. Welcome to the program. Today we talk matters of wayfinding. I'm speaking today with Jane Bryce from Visionary Access Consulting. Jane, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
The wayfinding standard, for those of us who don't know, what is that?
Right, well, the wayfinding standard is actually a new Australian standard. Many people will be familiar with the Australian Standard 1428 Part 1, which provides some general guidance about how access and mobility needs to be provided in the environment for people with disabilities. So the wayfinding standard, its code number will be AS, so Australian Standard 1428, so that's a suite of access standards, Part 4, and then it's Part 2. So AS 1428, Part 4, Part 2, wayfinding standard. So big, long title, but basically it's been put together to provide some guidelines to people about how to provide more wayfinding information for people who are blind or vision impaired, or more specifically, how to make the environment more legible for people who are blind or vision impaired.
So where does this come from and how did it come about?
Well, when the premises standards, so the disability standards that guide how buildings are to be built for people who are, have disabilities, when that was being reviewed just before its release, a report was put out by the Australian Parliament called Access All Areas. And within that report, it was highlighted that, among other issues, the wayfinding needs of people who are blind or vision impaired weren't actually addressed by the premises standards. So the premises standards, in a nutshell, sit below, just below the Disability Discrimination Act, which basically tells you that you can't treat anybody with a disability or their friends or family any differently. But it doesn't then tell you how you should do that. So the premises standard, Disability Standard for Education, and the Disability Standard for Accessible Public Transport were put together to provide different groups of the community with guidance. If you follow these principles and you do these things, then you will be okay. So for the premises standard not to recognise the needs of people who are blind or vision impaired in the regards to wayfinding, it was a pretty big gap. So the Australian Standards Group was tasked with developing a standard for wayfinding.
I guess in essence then, in this instance, we're talking about something totally different to what we've been used to in the past number of years. Do you want to just go over some of the things that are encompassed in that particular standard?
The wayfinding standard, because it was tasked to be developed under the premises standard, it will be referenced within the building code. So the building code and the premises standard at the moment roughly mirror each other. There's a couple of slight variations, but you know, if it's in the premises standard, it sits within the building code as well. So the drafting work that we've done to get the wayfinding standard to where it is today has been done not only by a special drafting group put together by Standards Australia, but also has been done with some fairly strict guidelines by the Australian Building Codes Board to meet the sort of referencing of the building code. So, you know, if it's not measurable, then it can't be within the standard. So, and because the need was only identified as being to address the needs of people who are blind or vision impaired, that set the parameters within which we were allowed to draft content. So within the actual wayfinding standard, unfortunately, because of those parameters, we're a little bit sort of reduced to what we could put in. So a whole load of other information now sits within what's called a handbook, so a guidance document. So within the actual standard itself, you have four sections. One is just the scope and general information. So that basically sets up the parameters within which the wayfinding standard is to be used. Then the first real section of information talks about wayfinding systems. So that basically says to people, you know, if you're going to, when you design a wayfinding system, don't just design it in isolation. It needs to fit into part of a larger sort of global understanding of information. And that needs to reference, you know, all the information that's available for somebody on a website about going to visit a premises or a building. And then the first thing that a person will find if they go to visit a new building once the wayfinding standard is released will be site and premises in identification. So as many people who are blind or vision impaired know, there's not a heck of a lot of accessible signage available at the moment. Mostly it's confined to signage on toilet doors and a little bit of signage for where a hearing loop is provided. So at the entry to either a building or even to a park or where a building's located off what's called the property line, so away from the footpath, the street footpath, then there'll be a sign there that says, this is 184 Glebe Point Road, Glebe. And so the person will know that they are either at or not at the destination that they're looking for. There'll be things called wayfinding paths. So basically, instead of sort of open plaza areas, the building designers and builders will need to provide a way of connecting that side entry to the entrance or to key facilities. We're also putting things like shorelines so that shorelines become a recognised part of the built environment, and then introducing some concepts like wayfinding information points. So a central point where you can go and find out, you know, where within this building are the common facilities. So where is the lift? Where are the stairs? Where are other ways of getting up and down if it's a multi-level building? What businesses are located or what facilities are located within a building, and then also decision points. So, you know, you get to a point, you've got to turn either right, left, or go straight ahead. Well, what is to the left? What's straight ahead and what's to the right? So then there's the signage, so actual technical specifications about how to make signage accessible, and then a little bit about lift systems. Now, that might seem a little bit strange for a wayfinding standard, but there's a, you know, important need, as I've just said, for knowing how to get around a building vertically. So we've sort of said, okay, to the lift committee, we will get the person up to the point where the button is pushed. Once the button for a lift is pushed, then it's your responsibility to enable a person who's blind or vision impaired to be able to operate that lift system and get to where they want to go. Then there's some information about pictograms, so the little diagrams that the symbols next to things, particularly you see them in airports, you know, with, you know, male and female symbols for toilets and suitcases for luggage collection. So just a whole load of information at the end that just sort of provides some additional guidance.
So where does electronic guidance fit into this?
Right, because electronic guidance is not measurable at the time that a building is made, it fits within the handbook, which is currently being drafted. So things within the handbook are all those elements that can't be assessed at the time of the building being built. So things like touch screens, audio provision of information and the acoustic environment, emergency help points, customer queuing systems, technology, handheld, sort of mapping information. So that all has to sit within the handbook. So that's not to say that that information isn't important, just because of the very strict Building Codes Board drafting requirements for a reference standard, it can't sit within the standard itself at this point in time.
I'm given to understand that you're seeking consultation from the community about this the standard. Yes. Is that correct?
Yes. So when a part of the drafting process for a standard is that a group of technical experts get together and they volunteer all their time and they put together the standard. It's done by consensus, so there's a whole load of arguments and a whole load of work. At the end of the drafting period, that goes out for what's called a public comment period. So that's the opportunity for any person who's interested to have a read through and provide their feedback and to be able to say, you haven't got it right, or you have got it right, or where's this or where's that. Now, this standard is a unique standard. This is the first time that an Australian standard has actually been released in an accessible format. So it's been a long time coming, and it involved a lot of advocacy on behalf of people who are blind or vision impaired to be able to have access to information, particularly given that the 1428 suite of standards are often referenced. So there's a two-part public comment. So there's the comment on the actual content of the standard, but there's also a request for comment about the format, the accessible formats within the way that this standard is being provided. So there's two formats available. There's an accessible PDF and there's also a DAISY format. So there are two ways to contact Standards Australia to get that. So there's an email and a phone number. If you choose to ring, you'll be asked for your contact details and then the draft standard. Now you can get one or both. It's up to you what you would prefer. And I would love it if people could actually look at both versions, because this is the format that's been chosen. Does it work for you? How accessible is it? And Standards actually wants that feedback as well. So you can send an email to mail@standards.org.au. So mail@standards.org.au. Or contact them on a phone number, which is 1-800-035-822.
And when's the deadline for feedback?
Right. Well, the deadline was the 18th of January, but because of the issues with the accessibility, it's actually been pushed out to Monday, the 15th of February.
Jane, thanks very much for joining us on New Horizons.
Thank you very much for having me.
And that was Jane Bryce from Visionary Access Consulting. Don't forget, if you want to find out more about that standard, you can contact mail@standards.org.au and they'll be happy to send you an accessible copy of the Australian Standard for Wayfinding. I'm Vaughan Bennison. It's been a pleasure to be with you for the last 15 minutes or so. Join me next week for New Horizons. To contact Blind Citizens Australia about this program or any other issue, call 1800 033 660. That's 1800 033 660. Or email bca@bca.org.au. This program is also available on the website at bca.org.au.